Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
This is taken from the 10th round of the first fight, right?
Good call. How'd you know that?
I heard about a third fight between you and Apollo. Behind closed doors. Is that true?
How'd you hear about that?
Who won?
It's kind of a secret. What'd you say your name was?
Don.
Okay. Well, and the girl said you wanted to talk about something?
Yeah, I want to talk to you about training me.
Training? I don't do that stuff no more. Sorry about that. Listen, it's getting kind of late, kid, so I'm going to close up.
How good was he?
Apollo? Yeah, he was great. He's a perfect fighter. Ain't nobody ever better.
So how'd you beat him?
Time beat him. Time, you know, takes everybody out. It's undefeated. Anyway, I got a lot.
So when Mickey died, he came and talked to you, right? Talked you out of quitting. Took you to L.A. Trained you. Brought you back.
How do you know all this?
How do you think?
Were you like a cousin?
He's my father.
Hello and welcome to Podshots. I am your host, Eric Williams, and on today's episode, we are taking a look at the 2015 film Creed. The film stars Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone, and Tessa Thompson. The film was co-written and directed by Ryan Coogler, and here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, the host of Word Balloon, Mr. John Suntress.
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely. Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And, John, you're usually one that is behaving themselves alcoholic beverage-wise. Is that the case tonight?
Yes, yeah, sadly. I think the hardest thing I had in the last 30 minutes was iced tea and hot coffee.
Woohoo!
So, yeah, at least caffeine-wise, I'm a fiend.
We are like minds. I'm having coffee at the moment.
There you go.
But it is special weekend coffee.
Tell me.
Means the little one gets up too early and watches her iPad and is crazy all day. So me and mom have a little special coffee with a little vodka and a little Bailey's. So
really vodka in the coffee?
Oh yeah.
Interesting. I mean, I've had Irish coffee and you know, that's okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I was actually kind of hoping the barista in me, I actually was a barista for a while, was hoping that you were going to be like, an excellent little coffee we got from Guatemala, you know, or Indonesia or whatever. And I literally can tell you the difference between those fine coffees and stuff.
Well, we are going to be stocking up on some Jamaican coffee when we were in Jamaica.
Jamaica Mountain.
Yeah. Coffee. Not the ganja.
No, but Jamaican Blue Mountain. That's the next coffee that, you know, is known from the region and stuff. Yeah, Jamaican coffee is awesome. Hawaiian coffee is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, before we kick off our discussion, we should mention that Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and choose from over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It is that easy.
Tremendous deal.
Yes, it is.
If I could be Donald Trump for a second, this is an excellent deal. You're going to love it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, that guy. So go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and get started today. Oh, man. Before we even get going, I don't even know what to make of that whole situation.
It's fascinating. I mean, I was really, really little in 68. Like, I was like three. But I do remember the 68 election because My father was a very staunch Nixon man and my mother was a very strong Democrat and for Humphrey. And it's interesting to note that as we head towards a possible brokered convention with the Republicans, it happened to the Democrats in 68. And that's the year, of course, that Bobby Kennedy got shot and, Eugene McCarthy, I believe. Yeah, he was one of the nominees, but they weren't crazy about him. And of course, all the riots broke out at the convention and they ended up choosing Hubert Humphrey, who technically wasn't running, but he was a safe choice. And I mean, that's kind of what they want because there was such disagreement on the convention floor. And I do remember in 76 when Ronald Reagan had his insurgent campaign And really, I mean, it took a couple ballots before they decided on Gerald Ford against Jimmy Carter. And then, too, in 1980, when although he lost to Jimmy Carter, Ted Kennedy had his insurgence campaign.
So,
I remember a couple of these things, but, you know, obviously not as aware as I am as an adult man.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
fascinating.
Like, I'm much more of a liberal, and my fiance has always grown up as a Republican. But in this cycle, she's like, I don't know what to do. She's like, I'm definitely not voting for Trump.
Friends. Yes. No, I ask all my Republican friends the same thing. It's like, honestly, I'm not trying to be a jerk. Who are you going to pick? And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not going to, she's not a Hillary fan either, you know, so it's not like she's not going to flip. And so she's like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, that's what makes it such an interesting potential election, because even the people that, you know, that don't like one front runner can give you an equal list of why they wouldn't vote for the other guy as well, or other woman. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's very interesting.
It is interesting. What's also interesting is the movie Creed, John.
Loved it.
Before getting into our discussion, let's go ahead and see what IMDb and their plot synopsis had to say about Creed.
Your daddy died in the ring.
I don't know him. Ain't got nothing to do with me. I've been fighting my whole life. It's not a choice for me. Every punch I ever thrown has been on my own. Nobody showed me how to do this. I'm ready.
Sick eyes on the nose, pressure actually slip, zip ties on the protesters. It's the six wives in the fry of a mold, weather better, medic, caviar bar, out in Odessa. Dirty needles breaking all the old records. 100 holes, one shovel, that's some old treasure. Holes deep, use Steve as a gold tester. Finger rolls, finger waves, passing from the old level.
This pitch is from the 10th round of the first fight, right? I heard about a third fight between you and Apollo. Behind closed doors. Is that true?
How do you know all this?
I'm a son.
Looking at the world through the TV, a day room, rapping over beats. They made electric chairs for his dying day. Last meals, no one can spend to try and stay. On death row like Shug in a late pot. Maybe he could dig a tunnel by the A block.
A great fighter once said, it ain't about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
See this guy here? That's the toughest opponent you're ever going to have to face. I believe that's true in the ring, and I think that's true in life. Now show me something.
So their plot synopsis goes like this. Adonis Johnson lost his mother when he was young and would get into constant trouble and end up in foster care or juvie. One day a woman goes to see him and tells him that her late husband is his father and her husband's boxing great Apollo Creed. She would take him in, educate him, but feels that he needs to be a boxer like his father. Again, I'm just reading. So he moves to Philadelphia and approaches Rocky Balboa and asks Rocky to train him. Rocky tries to talk him out of it, but it's something that he needs to do. Eventually, Rocky offers to train him, and when he beats a great boxer and his connection to Apollo is revealed, he is offered a chance to fight a world champion, and all he needs to do is take the name Creed. So I picked that one out because I love reading poorly written IMDb plot synopsis.
Yeah, that's like a bad book report, to be honest. That's like a C-minus book report.
Oh, yeah. And
you got a lot wrong, kid. You missed chapter 4 completely.
Trust me, I've read plenty of those as well. It'll be, explain what you think this book was about, and then they'll give me a rundown of the plot.
Treasure Island was an island full of treasure. You basically just like washed up to shore and immediately you started digging gold. Long John Silver, after the adventure, opened up a fish store and became very popular across the country.
I prefer the hush puppies. Some people like fish.
Oh, that's good. I like the hush puppies as well.
Okay, so let's talk about the film Creed. We specifically decided upon this a while ago. It was,
yes.
It was going to be at one point a movies we missed theme that we did back in January, because it was a film that I had wanted to see and I just didn't make time for and just didn't get around to seeing. And then when you and I were, tossing movies out, you said, what about Creed? And I was like, oh, well, that would be very appropriate. And why don't you share with those who may not know why you specifically would be invested in the movie Creed?
Well, I mean, I'm a lifelong
fight. History.
Yeah, I'm a lifelong fight fan. I mean, I grew up during the end of the Ali era and the great period of the middleweights of, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvin Hagler and Thomas Hearns, Roberto Duran, you know, that weight jump between lightweight and middleweight and all those classic fights. And then I spent 16 years covering boxing, first for Ring Magazine and Boxing Illustrated. I only did a brief stint with Ring, covering, fights from the Midwest and just a working class reporter, but, club fights and the occasional decent sized fight. I did cover, a big title fight while just in print. It was when James Toney won the middleweight title against Michael Nunn back in 1991. And then in my radio career, I spent another, 10 years from, actually about 12, I'd say from, actually about 14 now that I think about it.
You're getting old, Johnny.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of counting the years. Basically, from 1989 till 2006, I was a working-class boxing reporter in print for Ring Magazine and Boxing Illustrated, and then in radio in Chicago for The Score, the sports talk station, and did get sent to Atlantic City and New York and Vegas and got to cover good-sized fights, and not every one of them, but a lot of big ones. And then I went to Sporting News Radio, which is now the Yahoo Sports Network, and spent another 5 years from 2001 to 2006, again, covering very big fights. So, you know, I mean, I saw them all. Roy Jones, Lennox Lewis, De La Hoya, like I mentioned, James Toney, Julio Cesar Chavez, Mike Tyson, George Foreman, you know, pretty much, you know, almost every active fighter, I would say from like 1989, like I said, till 2006. And, still am a huge fan of the sport. And actually, you know, as we podcast, if there was more time in the day, I'd probably be doing a weekly boxing podcast of some sort because I'm just a huge fan. I love the Rocky movies, obviously, and love a lot of boxing films. And I am pleased to say that Creed is worthy to be put amongst the best of the boxing films.
I enjoyed it as well. Before getting into that, let's go ahead and bring up what I wanted to talk about. Tell me about your thoughts about Omaha's own Mr. Bud Crawford.
I don't know Bud Crawford. Tell me about
Bud Crawford is the basically the an up and coming middleweight who is he's undefeated. He's from Omaha.
What weight class?
He's middleweight, I believe.
Okay, hold on. Bud Crawford.
He's looking
up on boxing. Okay, Bud Crawford fight. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'll find him. Boxrec.com is an excellent. It's Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, Bud
Crawford. I don't know him by his fine nickname. We're not tight.
Yeah,
so, Terrence Crawford. Okay. Sure, Terrence Crawford. Absolutely.
And he,
fine fighter.
Trying to make a splash here, you know. But he's all over the place whenever he's in Omaha, and you know that's 45 minutes away from where I'm at. But he he's a big Huskers guy, a big Nebraska guy, and is on the verge of becoming too big for Omaha.
Yeah, 28-0, 20 knockouts. No, yeah. You know, my guess, and shame on me, because and I mean I've seen him fight certainly HBO and all. Mm-hmm. Good top promoted by Bob Arum and Top Rank. And a solid fighter. And yeah, I mean, I remember when he was fighting at 140 pounds and 147 and everything. So yeah, this is a guy who's kind of, you know, just still been developing and wasn't ready for the Pacquiao's or the Mayweather's and things like that. But no, a fine fighter. And I would say that he might wind up like a 1984 Olympian, Virgil Hill, who was from Bismarck, North Dakota, and would be a hometown guy. And a lot of his fights would still probably, you know, come from Bismarck. And given the amount of Americans right now, and certainly title holders as well, you know, I'm sure he does well in Vegas, but I'm sure there'll be some homecoming fights for him.
Yeah.
And that's the perfect place to have, you know, I'm trying to find the right word for it, because they're not fixed fights, but they are showcase fights where clearly a champion, just as a warm up and to keep him active, will fight a fighter of lesser skill. Essentially what happens in the very first Rocky.
I was going to say, kind of like in this movie also with Pretty Ricky.
True, exactly. And well, and yes, because in fact, you're right. The champion that Johnson ultimately fights, Donnie Adonis, exactly, is looking for a warm body because he's about to go to jail, and you know, his fight with a top contender falls through, and so that's where the opportunity comes in for young Adonis Johnson.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I could see that happening for Terrence Crawford. No, absolutely. And you'll forgive me, I don't know him well enough to call him Bud, but yeah. I like him. Good fighter. Absolutely. And that's why when you said Crawford, I'm like, is that? No, I know Terrence Crawford. I don't know Bud Crawford.
Right, yeah. Terrence Bud Crawford, sure.
So cool.
I guess
that's awesome.
How many of these actors, were you familiar with any of these guys, that any of the boxers? Sure.
The boxers. That's a good question. We should look up the cast list for Creed.
Because, let's see, like, we have Pretty Ricky as Tony Ballou, who I wasn't familiar with.
Is he a fighter?
Yeah, he's a British boxer.
Okay. You know, honestly, the Germans and the Brits really love their boxing. And in fact, I do buy, a British magazine called Boxing Monthly that it's $10 an issue. I don't care. It's such great coverage. And I wasn't paying attention to, you know, the fighters. I mean, they looked legit. So yeah, I don't know anything about him as a fighter.
Yeah. And then, the other one is, there's a Gabe Rosado. That was the guy that played the lion, the first fight.
Yeah. Leo. Yeah. The kid, who's fighting out of Mixed Gym.
Right. Yeah.
And Creed and everything. Yeah. Is it okay to spoil? Are we okay?
Oh, sure.
To spoil?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Cause yeah. And I mean, God, if you didn't see the movie by now, you know, then it wasn't that big of a priority to you. No, I thought it was excellent. And obviously the kids seemed to know what they were doing. I thought the fights were ridiculously authentic. And I heard, Michael Jordan on Bill Simmons' podcast talk about, you know, actually having to, you know, kind of spar with these guys, and that, no, they really strive for realism. And he got his bell rung a few times, when he was, you know, on the business side of things, and some of those knockdowns and stuff, those were real.
Yeah. I saw in there that, that it's a tradition in the Rocky films for the Stallone, every time he would film a movie, would get his bell rung at least once and actually get knocked out or knocked down at least.
Oh yeah.
And so they said that Michael B. Jordan wanted to keep that alive. So he said, yeah, let's go ahead and let's fire live bullets. Let's go ahead. And
I've
got dinged a few times.
Yeah. I've heard Stallone tell those stories as well. The story I never hear him tell, and I know this to be true, Ernie Shavers, a great 70s heavyweight who shook the hell out of both Ali and Larry Holmes, and both guys, maybe in the case of Ali on the downside, but not quite, you know, I mean, these were before the Sphinx fights.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly Larry Holmes, that was very much in his prime. Ernie Shavers was a lethal puncher, big, giant, bald dude. And he was the original choice for Clubber Lang. And,
oh, is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And they sparred to kind of get a feel for each other. And, you know, Stallone is really tiny.
Yes,
and
I can't
stress that enough. And the way to tell is in Rocky, two and in Rocky three, you can see him sparring. And especially in Rocky two, he's sparring with Roberto Duran, and they're the same size.
Mm.
And Roberto Duran is a very short man. So,
that was what was always funny, that he was a heavyweight.
Exactly. But, you know, with depth perception and everything, no, they made it work, and it was okay.
Especially because, you know, Clubber Lang, Mr. T, at that time was not a very big body. You know, he was a pretty lean guy.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, that was good. But in the case of Ernie, Ernie's a legitimate heavyweight, so he's even bigger.
Sure.
Not quite the Hulk Hogan weight disparity that we saw in Rocky III. But anyway, so they're sparring, and Shaver, you know, he's holding back because he doesn't want to hurt him. And Stallone could tell him. He's like, Ernie, you're holding back. And he's like, Mr. Stallone, I really don't want to hurt you. I'm giant compared to you. And he's like, Ernie, I've been with athletes. It's no big deal. Believe me, I do this all the time. I need to see you at your best. And he says he threw a punch about 50% of what he would throw in a heavyweight title fight, Ernie. Mm. And he hits Stallone in the gut. Stallone doubles over. They call time. He loses his breath and everything, and the wind's knocked out of him. And he's like, I'm sorry. He's like, no, it's okay. Hang on. I just had to get my breath. Hold on. Excuse me. So he leaves the ring, and he goes off to the dressing room, whatever. 15 minutes later, a production assistant comes up to Ernie and says, I think we're done for the day. And that was it. And they went with Mr. T instead. So, that's the thing, man. I mean, you know, again, I nothing but respect for Stallone. Mm-hmm. And I love his portrayal in this movie because it's age appropriate, but right. And certainly the way things turn, it's a very dramatic thing. And, you know, obviously it gets different, but before his medical condition is known, Rocky is still Rocky. And that's mm-hmm. kind of cool, but age appropriate Rocky and not supernatural. And I liked Rocky Balboa as well.
Yeah.
And I thought it was reasonably credible. Did we talk about that movie?
No.
Okay. Cause, I love that movie as well. But anyway.
Yeah. It's good. I like that as well. You know, when I had first heard about this film, I was very sort of concerned because I was like,
I get it.
I don't know if this is a story that I really need. And, you know, I didn't know if it was going to be very sort of stereotypical about, you know, you have some sort of African American stereotypes with like an abandoned father figure and the young kid's got to pull himself up is kind of what I was expecting. But I did purposefully go into this with knowing as little as possible about it. So I knew that Michael B. Jordan, you know, was the guy and Sylvester Stallone was in it, obviously. And that's kind of like I knew what it was sort of about, but not all the details. And I definitely didn't know about the spoilers about the cancer stuff.
Right. For Rocky. Yeah.
Right. And so I was like, okay, well, let's kind of see how this goes. And the whole first bit, I'm enjoying it, but I'm just kind of going along and it's, you know, I'm not feeling the sort of, I'm not like all the way with him yet quite with Donnie.
Okay.
Like I'm just kind of, you know, I'm watching.
Wait, so when you saw the movie, you didn't see the trailers. You hadn't seen
I saw one trailer, the first little trailer where he's, basically the scene where he's in Tijuana.
Yes.
And that was it.
Yeah, well, that was enough for me, but go on.
No. I saw that bit, and then I was like, okay, well, you know. But it was when they get through the whole, are you going to be my trainer, are you not, all that kind of stuff. And they start, Rocky's giving his first kind of speech when he's doing the training montage.
Uh-huh.
And he's delivering line after line, and I think it's the, you know, one step at a time, that line
one step at a time, one punch at a time, one round at a time.
Yeah, when he's doing that, and then I'm like, I wrote down on the little notepad here, I was like, definite goosebumps, holy shit, I'm with it now.
Well, that's the great thing. I mean, Michael Jordan was exceptional. He's an exceptional actor. Fruitvale Station.
Yeah, Fruitvale with Ryan Coogler.
Yes, I mean, he's great. I when I saw the trailer, it made me feel good, and I agree, the chemistry between them was immediate. As much as he is obviously, it is Donnie's story more than it is Rocky's story, but it is Rocky's story as well. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated that, because I think it was necessary for the handoff. And this really was like a Butch and Sundance kind of movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, Stallone really was a co-star, as he should have been, because we want to know what's happening with Rocky. And also, the kid had to prove himself to us and Rocky as well. And I get that. And I I love that. And I love the dignity that was returned to Rocky Balboa, because in the third and in the fourth movies, they were typical 80s action movies. Mm-hmm. That fifth movie, unfortunately, and Stallone does accept blame for it as much as anyone else. John Avildsen, who directed the first movie, which was such a good movie, directed five as well. But that was Stallone's story, and he made Rocky punchy, and he made Rocky really punchy. I mean, you know, to the point of, you know, borderline real mental, like, you know, I don't know, you know, just serious brain injury. I mean, mm-hmm. it was a serious brain injury in five. And he's just like too simple. And in six and in this movie, Rocky has his dignity back. And he is just wise. He knows how to do this stuff. He just doesn't want to do it anymore.
And he does feel like a real guy.
Yes.
You know, in these. Because he does still have a sense of humor. And
he's wise. Yeah, and he's wise. Because, I mean, like you said, Ricky Conlon's manager is like, oh, no, this could be a very competitive fight. No, we take him seriously. He's like, no, the only reason why you're doing this is because you know you can beat the kid. No, mm-hmm. no. And he's like, yeah, it is. And it's just like, yeah, Rocky Balboa has seen it all. He was a club fighter that was in the middle of his career when he gets the shot at Apollo. He was a world champion. And, so he's seen every side to boxing, and he knows all the angles. And that's exactly the way he should be. You shouldn't be able to pull something over on Rocky.
Right. You know what I thought was interesting was how they kept playing up the fact that Apollo was the greatest.
Yes, I was going to get to that as well.
To where they talk about Rocky, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, we celebrate him. But they do say when Pretty Ricky's talking about, well, no one cares about him anymore.
Right.
And so I like the fact that –
he's just another champion.
Yeah, yes. I like the fact that we have these six movies about this guy, but he's in history not known as the greatest fighter ever.
He's a footnote. He had his prime. But, you know, just like everybody else, but Creed was an Ali. Creed was exceptional. Mm-hmm. And you got that from the first movie on. Mm-hmm. Creed was a very savvy businessman. He conducted his own career. And that's the thing. I mean, you really, yeah, he was in a different class. And Rocky knows that from the first movie on. And that's the great thing, too, about Creed when they're in Adrian's restaurant and they're looking at the pictures and stuff. And it's like, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I think everybody had goose pimples when it's like, I heard there was a third fight between you guys.
Yes. And it's like, about that.
The Neiman post, the Neiman painting. Great. Excellent. And you know, all you see is really the first contact punch. And then you see him with the shiner in Rocky IV and he's telling his kid, yeah, I had a fight with a friend. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, well, we did that with your eyes, just with a friend. He's like, who did it with your eyes? Like, same friend. And it's like, yeah, who won that fight? Of course Apollo won that fight.
Yeah.
Because he is a class above him. And it's like, you know, no, he's the best. And well, that's...
Yeah, especially because Rocky, if you think about the psychology for that third fight, Rocky wouldn't have had anything to prove. He wouldn't have had anything, you know, he doesn't have any major loss.
Right.
They're just fighting.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't have that sort of extra motivation.
Yes, I mean, literally, it's two... martial artists, like, you know, all right, give me your best. Give me your best. Mm. And no, I didn't teach you everything because I would never allow myself to go that far. Yeah, it's really a shame. I mean, you know, it made sense for Rocky IV, I guess, to – I mean, I don't think they needed to kill Apollo.
Mm.
I think it would have been fine if they had hurt Apollo and even blinded Apollo or something else where Apollo could still be there because Carl Weathers is such a great actor and I think has proven – that he's a really great actor in his comedy and also his few dramatic films. And there aren't that many, and also dramatic TV. But I do think that Carl Perkins was excellent when he sang Blue Suede Shoes. But Carl Weathers, I think, was a solid enough actor that I think if you gave him serious drama, I think he could come through.
Sure, absolutely. I do really like how they have nods and make him somewhat like Apollo, talking about Donnie, to where he is a little bit of a shit talker in the ring.
Sure.
You know, where Rocky's just kind of let him hit the top of my head and I'll go out and just swing wildly all the time, right?
He's always pushing forward.
Yeah, yeah. And Apollo, you know, wants to frustrate and wants to jibber jabber. And sure. Michael B. Jordan does that as well and does it well. I think.
Well, he's got the chip on his shoulder. He still has something to prove. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Apollo's thing, it was I'm the best and already. I mean, that's the thing. I just think the Apollo we saw was that Ali of the 70s. I'm the greatest.
Sure.
And, you know, in fact, the way they've built this myth up, I would love to see a retro pre-Rocky movie about Creed and really love to. I mean, God, wouldn't it be great in the second movie if they did it like Godfather 2 and you've got Donnie on his track and you've got maybe young Apollo on his track.
Wonderful.
And, I mean, and really kind of see that. I'm a sucker for period pieces in film in general and certainly in sports. I mean, The Natural is just like that. And for me too, people always ask me if I have any fiction ideas and stuff and for comics. And no, but I did always have like this one fight idea that I would love to do. And it would be set in the 50s during, you know, when television and boxing were hand in hand. And you really had like three big time fights a week on television back in the day. I would like to, you know, I'd love to see a 70s thing with Apollo Creed. And maybe as he, you know, maybe show him as a contender coming up and fighting for the title. And who did he have to beat to be the man and stuff? Because that's the great thing, I think, that Creed in particular did. It really opened up the myth of Apollo.
Yeah, it really did.
It really makes you want to learn more about that time as much as Follow Donnie. And that's the other great thing about this movie is, you know, you've got like three different storylines they can follow in terms of sequels, which is great.
Well, they should make another one. I mean,
it's definitely happening. The second movie's definitely happening.
Okay, good. I was going to say it made $79 million.
Yeah, like, I mean, how much did it cost?
That was the profits on it.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, because the gross was 109, and the budget was estimated at 35.
There you go.
So.
No, I hope so. You know, Stallone says he doesn't want to do it, and given where his character is, you don't necessarily. I would like to see him continue because I think it would be great. But yeah, I would love to see, and also because you know, one of the trainers in the film. At first, I thought it was one of Apollo's legitimate children that was running Apollo's gym in
Hollywood. What are you talking about, Wood Harris?
But it's Duke. Wire? Yeah, it's Duke's kid.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I mean, that's Tony Burton's character. It's his son.
Yeah, I was so disappointed
you could have that dual track and have, you know, Duke and whoever was the number was, and you know, I'll be honest, I haven't watched it in a month or two. He's the fighter that breaks his hand that's supposed to fight the British guy.
Yeah, the guy that gets cheap-shotted. It's I forget his name, but that's kind of what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like, I thought the big fight was going to happen
right
early, and that, you know, Donnie was going to shock the champ, and then he was going to have to defend it against his former teammate. Oh, that's
interesting. See, and I thought it would be that he would have to fight Duke's fighter first, and just be a contender, and not even much like the first Rocky. Well, the first Rocky movie is fighting for the title, but that's the thing, you know, build his way to an actual title shot.
Sure.
But regardless, that fight is still there. You know, no, it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. I mean, obviously he's still a contender, and then also, I'm an asshole for not remembering her name. Tessa
Thompson. She plays Bianca.
Yeah, Tessa Thompson's character was great. And I mean, and that was a much richer woman's character than Adrian was, at least initially in the
first. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's one of the things that it said that some of the trivia that I read up on was that she worked with Ryan Coogler pretty closely because she said she did not want to take the role if she was just going to play a love interest.
Yeah, yeah. And that's fair. And her story was really interesting.
Yeah, and I do like that she is an actual character, that she's not just a type.
Well, and also, I love when he beats Leo the Lion, and she jumps in the ring and she shoves him, and she hits him almost as hard as Leo did. Right. I just love that. It's like, come on, man, and that's great. She's a tough woman.
Yeah, that whole bit where they're like, we're going to tear up the town, we're going to go out, blah, 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 and then they go back and they're asleep.
Yep, and watching Skyfall.
Skyfall, that's right. Yeah, so, yeah, I really like that.
That's it. No, and again, I mean, that's the thing. Good humor in the movie, very believable boxing, good dramatic things, and nobody over. Like, I think everyone was trying their best, and nobody, I think, looked foolish reaching too far. God, Stallone, so much comedy. Like you said, all the training montages are great, and just his little comments as he's reading the newspaper. And just, yeah, you know, I don't want to say anything. We used to be able to do one-handed push-ups, that's all. You know, and just little shit like that was fantastic. And yeah. I mean, you know, and those were always the best moments of all the Rocky movies. You know, it was always the little asides.
Absolutely.
It made very mature. Neither are you very mature. You know, and just stupid stuff like that was always fun. And the chicken, they go back.
Yeah, the callbacks to the chicken, sure. The
chickens are slowing down. That was awesome.
I do love the close-up on eggs when he's making eggs.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, shit, are they going to do the raw eggs?
He wakes up, and he's ready to do road work, and he's still listening to 70s Philly Soul, man. And you know, poor Michael Jordan is just like, what the hell is this crap? And it's like, oh, no, man. And I'm more with Rocky, where I'm like, oh, this is a good song.
John's like, oh, nice.
So yeah, that was great. And that's the thing. No, the movie had a good sense of humor. And then, you know, there is the awkwardness of like Rocky just being like, look, yeah, sorry, Pete, I don't care about your kid, Leo.
Yeah.
And his fight career. But this kid, well, you know, he's my best friend's kid. I gotta do something about it. It's so funny, coming off of, just seeing Batman Superman. Boy, there's a difference in terms of like a relationship, you know, and respect because it was brought out through, Jesus, 40 years of movies now. When you think about that, the original Rocky was 75 and Creed was 2015. You buy that, Apollo and Rocky's relationship changed from adversaries to respect to legitimate friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I can't say the same with the quick turnaround in Batman v Superman.
Well, you gotta be in a hurry now.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. And I mean that, you know, and I'd say the same thing, by the way, about Star Trek 2, Star Trek Into Darkness versus Wrath of Khan, the film that it was riffing off of.
Oh, yeah. Well, my big thing is when they say when Cumberbatch has his big reveal line of what his name is, and the audience has a bigger reaction than what the characters in the film should have had. Because it's the audience is like, holy shit, it's Khan. But the characters have been like, and?
Yeah.
What? Well, I don't know who you are, so.
Well, that's the thing. Or even Spock declaring, oh my God, you're my best friend. It's like, no, he's not. You've known him 6 months.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys had been together for 20 years in Star Trek 2, and it was, no, I'm losing my right arm. I mean, I know I've done it on my podcast a million times about how much I hate Star Trek Into Darkness versus Star Trek 2. But that's the great thing. I mean, I really think Creed had the right amount of fan service that made all of us who've been on the ride since 75 smile. But for those who really were just stepping into it and be like, yeah, Rocky movies, I heard about them or whatever, you know, are like, okay, yeah, I get that. All right. That sounds familiar enough. But, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It didn't take away from the movie.
Sure. One of the other things that I want to mention is in that first fight with Leo, the lion, I'm going to have to look at it again to make sure, but I would almost swear that that's one take.
It certainly looks like it. And a lot of those shots look like it. I think the final round opens. Yeah, you're probably and from a knockdown standpoint, you're probably right. I think you're right.
Because it goes in the cameras, you know, spinning and rotating so guys can, you know, hop in and out of their marks and sure. All that kind of stuff, but it, I mean, I believe it is one take and I'm like, "Holy shit."
Yeah.
Like how difficult is that?
Well, again, that's the thing. Those fight scenes really are legit.
Mm-hmm.
I got to interview Jimmy Nickerson who did help Stallone on several of his Rocky movies, and they were missing by, you know, a good couple inches and stuff.
Yeah,
he also made a movie too with Cuba Gooding and James Marsden called Gladiators.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen that.
That was shot here in Chicago, and that I got to go on the set, and that's when I met Jimmy Nickerson. I talked to him. It was for a story that ended up not happening for Boxing Illustrated that I wrote. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, so I really think, again, like we were talking about earlier, they strive for authenticity. And yeah, no, I think they did an incredible job. And I mean, really, the fight scenes, I think Scorsese did, you know, the same thing for, you know, 35 years ago with Raging Bull.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, technique has only gotten better. I don't know if they used any special robotic cameras or if it was just a, you know, on a Lazy Susan, you know, where it was able to rotate or whatever. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Regardless, however they pulled it off, it looked fantastic.
It's amazing. And the authenticity of having the HBO guys and even doing a Ricky Conlan mini documentary that,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, Donnie is watching on his iPad, stuff like that. And, you know, another movie like that, by the way, if for people who did enjoy Creed and are looking for something else recent that's almost as good, Southpaw. With
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal, another really good boxing movie. Creed was a little bit better, but honestly, I loved and have watched Southpaw almost as many times as I've watched Creed.
Really? Okay, I was going to ask you about that because that wasn't mentioned, and I remember being when I saw I've seen the Southpaw trailer more often than I because I just watched this one the once.
Okay,
and was like, oh, I will definitely get caught up and watch Creed. You know. But with Southpaw, I don't know if it took me a few more times or if I was really kind of hooked by the Eminem song that plays throughout it or the sort of transformation that Jake Gyllenhaal does. Because I always think of him as Donnie Darko.
Sure.
I'm like, well, that's not what.
No, he was great. Forrest Whitaker. And really Rachel McAdams, 50 Cent. Holy shit. 50 Cent. That's the best acting I've ever seen him do.
He's the promoter, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's, you know, I was like, all right, you know, I'm like, he did fine. He did terrific. Very good.
Wonderful.
Way to go, Curtis.
Curtis. One of the things that I had appreciated about this film compared to the other Rocky movies is I felt like, you know, I think Stallone is a good writer, can be a good writer, but I feel like the actual dialogue was a little crisper, written by someone else, someone a little bit of a different voice than what Stallone's had for, you know, 30 years or whatever.
Sure.
And so I had a couple of different lines that I really liked, and they weren't anything mind-blowing, but it was, you know, my plan is to do what I love to do for as long as I can. And I really liked that, and I thought that that was something that pretty much encapsulates Rocky.
Yeah.
You know, he's not thinking about the problems from leading with his head for years. You know, he's not thinking about anything other than the here and now and what he is, you know, in love with doing.
Well, and that's, I think they set that up in the sixth movie. I mean, mm-hmm. That's the thing. I really think that Coogler. I think that Coogler took the best, the essence of what was good in all the Rockies, and including six, mm-hmm. and you know, kept all that. And, you know, I'd be interested to know how much of Stallone's lines, you know, were Ryan's and how much were Sly's, because I know that he absolutely wanted, you know, Stallone to be involved. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Stallone agreeably put his hands in, you know, put himself in the hands of a young director and respected Coogler and everything. So, you know, I don't know. I think, you know, I mean, it would be interesting to find out. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I kind of think Rocky's character was, you know, other than the fact that he felt he had, like he said in the sixth movie, unfinished business in terms of, I just want to see if I can still do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not looking, you know, no, I'm not going for the title. I mean, that I go back to six because he has that great conversation with Paulie. And Paulie's just like, all right, what's bothering you, man? And he goes, you know, it's not the statue. It's funny how they took down the statue in six and it's back up in Creed. But that's okay. I didn't mind that either. But yeah, you know, he's being real about himself. He's got his restaurant,
mm-hmm.
going through his day-to-day thing. He wants his kid to be happy. His kids, you know, and I mean, that's even that great line about, you know, yeah, where's your son? And I mean, eh, he's up in Canada, you know.
He says he's in this place called Vancouver. As if no one's ever heard of it. You know,
I don't know what the hell that is, but all right.
Little things like that would make me smile. And they're not comedic lines, but, it's just little things that would be like, oh, it's really endearing.
Yeah, he's a simple guy. You know, I just read an excellent, I don't have the title of it, but a British writer tracked down a bunch of former top contenders and champions from the 60s through the 90s. And, you know, some of the old guys really did talk like Rocky in terms of, yeah, they, you know, they had their moments and they were heroes in Madison Square Garden and Vegas and stuff, but now they're leading very quiet middle class lives. And yeah, they're not world savvy, you know, and, you know, maybe Rocky would have been a little bit more probably because you see in that montage in Rocky III as he has his 10 title defenses.
Yes.
You know, who knows?
With his tiger jacket and all that.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's Rocky II. I like that. That's actually Rocky II, and he's still Rocky II is basically a rewrite of Requiem for a Heavyweight.
Mm.
With a happier, with a bit of a happier ending. And Requiem for a Heavyweight ends with a dignified ending, more realistic. It's really interesting, too. I think Creed does come full circle to where the first Rocky movie certainly was, because Tarantino always points to the first Rocky movie as when, in the 70s, they suddenly remembered, oh, you know, we haven't had a movie with a happy ending in a really long time.
Mm.
Let's do that. And I mean, it still ends with, no, Rocky doesn't win the title, but he gets the girl. He's got his self-respect. All he wanted to do was go the distance.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, and that's really, you know, and that's what he teaches, I think, Donnie as well, but also You know, I think Creed is a real movie of the streets and still, you know, and an A-level movie, but I think it's honest with where it depicts its background and where people are in the movie and stuff. It's a very real movie. Like I said, Rocky 3 and 4 really were 80s, you know.
Yeah, 80s fluff, sure.
Yeah, 80s fluff. That's a perfect way to describe it, exactly. And even Rocky 5, with its flaws, was still kind of 80s hangover BS.
Yeah.
And you know, and I mean, it did have, like, you know, you had kind of a Don King character in George Washington Duke and poor Tommy Morrison, who I actually, you know, I wouldn't claim to say that I got to know him well, but I spent enough time with him that I certainly felt bad for him, even in his prime, where I'm just like, this kid is so over his head with what he has to deal with. And I think in their schlocky way, they showed that in the movie as well.
Five. Sure, yeah.
I met him after 5. I met him when he was fighting George Foreman. For a heavyweight fight. It wasn't sure for the title, but it was a mid-90s fight. And I just did. I just felt really bad for Tommy because he just seemed over his head. This was more like the first Rocky movie where it was real. And God, I love, you know, going to the other gym and you got Stitch in there, the awesome, cut man that, you know, does MMA and does boxing and stuff and is well known to people who watch, cable, you know, MMA or boxing and stuff. They'd all recognize Stitch. He's even in, Here Comes the Boom. That Kevin James and
MMA. Oh, sure.
So, you know, and that's really the only, actually, there is a little bit of Hollywood magic when he can't see and Stitch is letting him,
you know, when he's tapping at his head. Yeah.
How many fingers? And it's like, all right, that's okay.
Yeah.
I'll cut him slack on that. That's the only, like, non-real moment.
Yeah. It's especially because, you know, he's completely blind and, you know, pretty Ricky is not smart enough just to keep throwing right hooks that he wouldn't be able to see.
Well, and further, a ring doctor is watching the entire corner along with the guy when he's saying, are you okay?
Oh, okay.
So to try and, like, get by that, it's like, hey, let's see you do a kid without your cut man tapping your neck. Okay.
Yeah, really.
Cause seriously, yeah, I mean, honestly, I've been to enough fights, at ringside and really, you know, not more than a yard or two away from the corner. You can see everything that's going on. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. So yeah.
Yeah.
Cute, but not.
There's the movie bit, right?
That's all right.
Well, some of it, I mean, I really like how they use the cinematic aspects where they lighten they darken the crowd. They bring the crowd lights down.
Sure.
At times they really focus in on either the blood splatter or the bell ringing or what have you. And just kind of, you know, make you aware that you're watching a movie.
Yeah, it's still a movie and that's okay. No, I mean, that's the thing. Excellent filmmaking. Again, I think a really legitimate story that opened itself for several different directions in terms of sequels. Very appropriately appreciative of the original material.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think it has created a new franchise that you can move forward with, no matter what Stallone wants to do.
Right, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Stallone real quick. This is this was... And I guess I'll talk about the one sort of slight problem I had with the film in a little bit. But so I'm watching the film and I'm really enjoying it, like I was saying. And we get to where Stallone's sick. And like I said, I didn't realize that this was going to happen. And this, you know, it's this little sequence where he finds out and he's giving a speech and he says things that he regrets to Donnie and all of that. It's right. That's where, you know, he earns his Oscar nom.
Okay. Right? Yeah,
and
sure.
That kind of stuff.
Sure.
And so I'm watching it, and it's when he's being told in the doctor's office about what he has, right, and what the situation is. And I write that watching a cinematic icon age and get sick and get weak on screen for the first time in I don't know, a long time, I guess, made me think of my own mortality, where I was when I first watched Rocky.
Sure.
You know, how my life has changed for better and worse, all of that sort of thing. You know, because I was born in the late 70s, and so I grew up with Rocky III.
Sure.
You know, I was a kid and thought Mr. T was cool because of the A-Team and just watched the hell out of Rocky III, got a little older and realized, oh, okay, well, 1 and 2 is kind of where it's at. But you know, so I just remember watching that, and that's the thing that we don't get. And I understand the reasons business wise behind rebooting James Bond, behind rebooting Batman, but you don't get to see those people fall away and die off and get real people sick and that kind of thing. And I think that that robs from a lot of emotions because I was really struggling at times during this. And it would just like hit me because I'd be like, oh my God, like I'm goosebumps because of the fight and because of Donnie's journey. And then I'm like trying not to lose my mind because Rocky Balboa is dying. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm just like all over the place. And I was like, what are you doing to me movie? are you doing?
Yeah. You watch the beginning of that movie when Donnie first meets Rocky and they're at Adrian's mm-hmm. and Rocky is a little bit older, but still looks okay. And then by the time of the final fight, Rocky's gone through chemo. He's losing his hair. Mm-hmm. He's wearing Mick's old hat and everything, it seems. And, you know, I mean, he looks emaciated. He does look thinner and he does look weaker and everything. So no, I get that. It's funny. Just a few weeks ago when they made the announcement that Spielberg and Harrison Ford are considering doing a new Indiana Jones.
Sure. Yeah.
And just the backlash. Too old. No, we want a new Indy. And I'm like, just what you said. No, I want to see Indiana Jones struggle as much with old age mm-hmm. as he struggles with whoever the hell they put him in front of. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be a very interesting thing. And I think that would be a great missed opportunity if they still want to do it. And in fact, I know that they were talking about possibly one storyline being a Fountain of Youth kind of storyline. What if that's the goal? What if Indy is faced with that? Hey man, you could be young again. And, you know, have some starry-eyed kind of John Hurt guy like you had in Crystal Skull or in any of the old movies that is a real believer in what they're looking for. You know, and that Indy has to face that also with the idea of it's what made Frank Miller's Dark Knight so great.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you were faced with a Batman that still wanted to do the job, but knew physically he wasn't what he used to be. And he had to even use more of his guile to project that. In Rocky's case, he's accepted his fate.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you're right. I mean, and that is different because beyond accepting his fate, he's like, all right, I'm giving up. I'm tired of living. And I know a lot of old people that reach that point of life, and it's really sad.
Oh, well, that's a heartbreaking line when he's, and I wrote it down here, is when he says, everything I got has moved on and I'm here.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, Jesus.
That scene in the graveyard with, you know, I mean, he brings the fifth for Paulie's grave and he's reading the paper like he was doing in Rocky VI, in Rocky Balboa. And yeah, man, it's no, I mean, that's the thing is kids in Vancouver, he's got nothing left. Like he says, when he points to the posters in the gym and he's like, my future's back there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. I mean, that's the thing. And like you said, like when Ricky Collins, like a big deal, Rocky Balboa, that's ancient history. And yeah, that's kind of where he is now. He's a trivia question. He probably can still get a free beer and a free meal if he goes to the right joints in Philadelphia, but not every place.
Yeah.
And and I'm sure there's a generation of 30-year-olds who have no idea who the hell Rocky Balboa is in that universe.
Sure. And that's what I like about that is that it does seem like in Philly, he's still a person that's known. But, you know, outside of that, it's like, oh, yeah, I know who that is. So what?
Yeah, or exactly. Or he can walk through an airport without, you know, being stopped if it's in a different city or if he probably in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows? I mean, that's what's kind of interesting. Yeah, it's like old baseball and football and basketball players.
Oh, sure. Well, and I mean,
you know who that was? No.
Yeah, I mean, well, Lincoln, Nebraska is just full of that, you know, with Nebraska football being such a huge deal here.
I'm sure.
You know, you could have a play and not play the rest of your 3 years or 4 years. And as long as you have a play, you can sell homes for the rest of your life.
Sure.
Just based on who you are, you know?
I do know. Believe me, enough, you know, 16 years in sports talk radio, you know, both national and local sports talk radio and stuff. Yeah, I got my fill.
I'm sure. And one of the things that I think is interesting, though, about this story is, you know, we see how many origin stories, how many young kid trying to figure it out stories. We don't see a lot of person past their prime still trying to hang on type stories.
Yep.
And we have some, but we don't see that as often. And how, you know, how it's every year that happens in either Major League Baseball or the NFL or, you know, whatever sport you want to name, it's a guy that's trying to hang on too long and isn't what he used to be.
You know, a great example of that in movies is Everyone's All American, the Dennis Quaid movie with, oh God, now I'm blanking, the woman that's in all of the American Horror Stories, the older actress. Lovely. She was so beautiful back in the day. She's in King Kong.
Oh, holy shit.
She's in the Dino De Laurentiis King Kong. And yeah, shame on me because she is. She's a
Jessica Lange.
Jessica Lange. Thank you very much. There you go.
I almost said Jessica Tandy. I was like, that's different. It's a little different.
But yeah, you know, I mean, everybody's all American. Dennis Quaid plays a running back that went to, I want to say, Alabama as a college kid. And then, and I'm probably getting the school wrong, but then goes to the NFL and then winds up his career in the AFL because he's trying to hang on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when the AFL is first getting started and stuff. And oh yeah, he's nothing compared to what he was back when he played in the Cotton Bowl back in the 50s and stuff.
Sure,
and certainly
yeah.
in his earlier NFL career. And yeah, that's Frank DeFord, the great Sports Illustrated and HBO writer and reporter. Wrote the story Everyone's All American. It's a fiction, you know, it's fiction, but it's certainly based on enough fact that yeah, it feels real. Timothy Hutton's in it as well. Great movie.
Okay.
John Goodman. Excellent, excellent 80s movie.
I'm gonna have to look that up. I don't know that one. I will definitely have to do that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the end and the actual fight with Pretty Ricky. What did you think about having Pretty Ricky being the sort of villain or the sort of end game? Because what we had that was so nice about the Rocky films is there was always a predetermined bad guy, right? You had Apollo and he's like, oh, it's this unbeatable Apollo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was again, like Apollo wasn't like malicious in the first film.
Sure.
He just had a different agenda.
Yeah.
And
he didn't take it
seriously.
And
he didn't take Rocky. The promoters and Apollo did not take Rocky seriously. Rocky knew that he wasn't in the guy's league, but was just, and at first was training with the idea of, all right, maybe I can beat this guy. And then it occurs to him when he goes to the stadium, and it's like, you are so insignificant, you don't matter to this promotion.
Mm.
And he realized, I can't win. There's no way I'm going to win. I'm not in this guy's league. And he would literally have to knock him out to get a win. I mean, you know, again, because everything was set up to be a nice Merry Christmas or whatever. I think it was Christmas Day that they do. So, yeah, I mean, it was just supposed to be like a simple little promotion to make everybody happy and fulfill a fight for Apollo and move on to when the other contenders are in shape and really ready to fight him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the parallel was there with this fight. Also, sadly, as we speak. Adrian Bronner, who's this great junior welterweight champion, just fought last night or Friday night in Washington, D.C., and then has to proceed to turn himself into Ohio authorities because he was wanted on two warrants for armed robbery and assault.
Oh, really?
And he stole $12,000 from a guy and hit the guy and also threatened the guy with a gun. So I don't know what's going to happen to him in Ohio. I can't believe they allowed him to fight. But kind of similar to what Ricky Conner
was really, wow.
through. And certainly Floyd Mayweather faced a similar situation. Unfortunately, that's the problem with a lot of professional sports that, you know, these guys get a lot of money. They don't obey the laws and sometimes they get caught not obeying the laws. Hell, Tyson Fury, the gypsy, and honestly, that is his way of life. I don't mean to sound like he's not Romani. And I don't mean it in a disparaging way, because sometimes when the word gypsy is used, you know, people might think it might be a racial thing. It's not. It's a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's British. But he is a guy who, yeah, sometimes they just they break like simple laws. They might walk out on a check. They might have a drunken barroom brawl and get busted for it and stuff. It's part of their lives. And so unfortunately, yeah, there's a lot of fighters out there that kind of live that kind of thug life. And it's too bad. It really is too bad. I wish there were more upstanding citizens, and certainly with the amount of money they make, it doesn't seem to make sense. I don't know. I don't know. But unfortunately, yeah, it is. I felt the Conlon fight was kind of, and the circumstances around Conlon leading into the fight was not out of the ordinary.
Sure. And I think what is nice about the lead in is that it sort of, you know, it makes sense because they had this huge fight, almost like a Pacquiao Mayweather, to where it was these people that had just kind of been dancing around each other for a long time and then they're about to fight. And I think it's actually Pretty Ricky punches the guy and breaks his cheekbone.
That's right. In the press conference.
Yeah. And
that's right.
And so that's called off, and he needs someone else to fight, basically, and make up the money that he lost. And so I'm like, okay, well, this all makes sense. My only problem, and the only problem I had with the film, I guess, is I didn't really have a lot of, I felt like the movie was more about Donnie getting out of his dad's shadow and being his own man and that kind of thing. And I was really invested into that, and I didn't really care who he was fighting. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have a real strong connection with the, oh, yes, you have to beat this one guy.
Oh, no, I agree with you. And if anything, I was expecting prior to the press conference that it would be the guy that he fought in his father's gym, that was the guy that he was going to end up fighting.
Yeah, and that would have been very much like the MMA film Warrior.
But that's, you're right. Yes, very much so. And I love that movie. Mm-hmm. Excellent movie.
Yes, big very, fan very good. Of the film.
Well, but instead, I think this obviously opens the door for the sequel, and it will be even more interesting because, again, not only do you have this guy that has already, like, showed up Donnie in the gym and knocked him down and made him, you know, made it pay after the flash knockdown that Donnie was able to get. Or no, he doesn't knock him out. He knocks the other guy out before he gets to the big contender that ends up having his jaw broken by Ricky Conlon.
Yeah, the number two pound-for-pound guy.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now that's set up, and it's, you know, him and his dad's old, you know, the son of his dad's old trainer and stuff. I'm sure a family friend. I'm sure somebody that – I like Felicia Rashad a lot. I was kind of disappointed that the original actress that played Apollo's wife that shows up in 1, 2, and 4 of the Rocky movies. Mm-hmm. I don't know what she's doing now. And who knows? Maybe she did pass away, or maybe she doesn't act anymore. But I thought Felicia Rashad did great. It would have been nice to see that woman get an opportunity.
Yeah, it would have, because I was like, whoa, what is she doing in here? And I was like, wait a minute, that's Apollo's wife? No, it's not.
My wife, Camille! No, it's not, actually. Mrs. Huxtable, everybody. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, Apollo Creed had sex with Mrs. Huxtable? What the hell happened here?
That's right.
A different crossover that never actually happened, but should have. but she was fine. I don't know. That didn't bother me. And like you said, I agree. It didn't matter. But again, I think it made it even harder when you think, okay, no, the guy's the champ. He's the pound for pound best. Mm-hmm. But, you know, crazy upsets have happened. Also, there've been promotions like that where it's set and the main opponent is lost. And it's like, yeah, but like the circus tent is up and all the levers are in motion. We need a fight. There's too much invest in this. It happened on Showtime when they first got the Mike Tyson contract, and he was supposed to fight – oh, God, now I'm blanking on his name. But he was supposed to fight a guy. The guy pulled out with an injury, and Clifford Atien. Clifford Atien.
Oh, sure. I know that name, sure.
And Atien pulled out with a gut injury, and I was working at Sporting News Radio at the time. And the consensus around the room was, well, the fight's off. I'm like, no, it's not. This has nothing to do with Clifford Atien. It's kind of like the first Rocky fight. Mm-hmm. This is all about Mike Tyson. They need a warm body. A better example of that was Tommy Morrison was supposed to fight Michael Bent, who played Union Kane in Rocky V. And they were going to have a real fight on HBO because Michael Bent was a real heavyweight contender. Tommy was a real heavyweight contender. Why not? It's easy. And Michael Bent pulled out because they weren't paying him enough money. So on a very last moment, they got Tim Tomaszek from Green Bay, Wisconsin, who was this fat, very sweet, doughy, ridiculously blonde, blue-eyed, white kid that, you know, simpler than simple and just the sweetest guy in the world. And I knew him from the Midwest and covering fights. And he came in and he lasted a couple rounds and Tommy got the knockout. It didn't matter. But then in the post-fight interview, he just got his – he talked like he came stepped off the set of Fargo. Oh, jeepers creepers. I'm just happy you know to get the fight. And it was a real honor to fight Tommy Morrison. And Tim was like a story for the next 2 weeks about what a cute, crazy kid he was and everything. Mm. Great guy. But, yeah, it just doesn't matter. I mean, that's the thing. Sometimes big fights happen. And that's what happened with Atien and Tyson. I'm like, look, they're going to even get – if they have to get a replacement, they will. But that fight's going on come hell or high water. Mm-hmm. And ultimately they just gave Atien a little bit more money because – you know, Tyson already fought a Peter McNeely, and it would have really been unsatisfying if he had fought a bum and really fought a ham and egger and stuff. So they ponied up more money. I think they gave him another $100,000 or so, or $150,000, and Atien went through with the fight. But he also, like, if you watch it now, it's embarrassing. It was either a first or a second round knockout. He knocks him down. He goes down. His mouthpiece popped out. He knows enough to bolt up and put his mouthpiece back in, and then he lies down again and takes the count out. I mean, it's such a what a BS fight.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, that's the thing. So luckily, I had, and of course, through the magic of Hollywood, Donnie obviously proved a bit tougher for Ricky Kama.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it was definitely once they got into the second round and we get into a little bit more of the old fight montage, then that's when the goosebumps came back again. And I was like, oh, my God, like this movie is just toying with me. You know, I was like, and so I was like, then I started feeling, you know, like I was rooting for him. Something about the eye makeup of his shut eye really was like, oh my God, what are you doing? Get out of the ring.
Yeah. Well, like, that's Hollywood. Rocky certainly had his moments as well with that. I like that it's a light heavyweight, division that they're competing in as well, because 175 is a lot of times overlooked and it's a great division. And Michael Spinks, we all remember Michael Spinks were getting blown up by Tyson in 93 seconds.
Sure.
What a lot of people don't remember is he had fought himself out of the division. There was no one else to beat. And Michael Spinks, literally, if he's not the best light heavyweight champion ever, he's no lower than number three all time. And I mean, that's including Archie Moore and Billy Kahn and some great historic boxing names that if you're a hardcore fight fan, I think people would be nodding and agreeing with me. But that's the thing. Michael Spinks, he won both belts. He was the undisputed light heavyweight champion. He cleaned out the division. There was no one else left to fight. That's why he went up to heavyweight and fought Larry Holmes. And he beat him in the first fight. He beat him in the first fight. And he got a draw in the second fight. And then he knocked out Jerry Cooney. And he fought a sweet Stefan Tankston. And then finally, you know, fought Tyson. And yeah, he was scared shitless with Tyson.
But, yeah, absolutely.
You know, everybody else was scared. The only guy I ever knew who was not scared of Tyson was Evander Holyfield.
Mm.
And I was able to have a couple conversations with him. And he's like, I never felt that way. And I mean, because they knew each other even as amateurs. And he's just like, he never bothered me. He goes, we got along okay. He goes, we weren't friends. He said, but I saw him. And he goes, I don't understand why everyone's scared of him. And I didn't think that he was going to beat Tyson the first time they fought. And God, Evander just fought the most masterful fight.
Mm.
So anyway, I'm digressing, but
no, that's good. That's good.
Can't help it. Honestly, it's funny. It happened before Creed came out, but I have to say that the current state of boxing has gotten my interest back again to the point where, like I said, I am even considering doing some sort of boxing podcast. And like I said, I was never, I was just a working class boxing reporter, but you know, for 16 years I covered it professionally, and also just, you know, like I said, this very constant interest going back to when I was a little kid. With the exception of like the last 5 years where I kind of got disgusted for a while,
mm-hmm.
and I'd still poke my head in, and you know, I kept track of Pacquiao and Mayweather. Sergio Martinez, an excellent middleweight fighter, huge fan of his. Miguel Cotto, a very good fighter. Amir Khan. So there's a handful of good guys, but now it's very interesting. And certainly with Klitschko losing to Tyson Fury, the heavyweight division is wide open. There are two Americans that are legit.
Say it ain't so.
You know, it's sad. It's true.
An American heavyweight.
I know. What the hell?
Get
it's sad. True. Yeah. You know, I mean, Deontay Wilder, I think has a lot of talent and has a big punch. He's still learning on the job, but unfortunately the division is weak enough that he is no better or no worse than the WBA title holder. Charles Martinet has the IBF belt, and he got it under ridiculously easy circumstances, and he's an unknown American with a belt. Vladimir Klitschko could very easily win the rematch against Tyson Fury, but I do think that at 40, his days are numbered no matter what happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Tyson Fury is just, he doesn't impress me. And I thought he fought a very pigeon-toed. I don't know if you saw that fight or are aware of it.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I was, I think I was following along with you. And I've got a couple of local radio guys that I know that are boxing guys. And I think that they were watching it and then just live tweeting it.
And did they do the same thing as me? Because it's just like, nothing is happening in this fight. I mean, Fury would hit him, but he was on his toes. He was so afraid of getting hit that he just fought this very tentative fight. Klitschko did nothing. He just posed. And I hear that at the time, what's her face, the cheerleader from Heroes, Hayden Panettiere, who is, if they're not married, they're certainly together. They had a baby, and she's in post-pregnancy depression.
Oh, some postpartum.
Yeah, postpartum. I wasn't sure if that was the right word. And then also, you know, everything that's happening with Russia and the Ukraine, Vladimir, Vitaly, the older Klitschko brother, is legitimately involved in Ukrainian politics and very much, you know, there in negotiations with Russia on how to, you know, I don't even know what the current state of it is, but certainly has been in the thick of it since, you know, the military action against the Ukraine began. So, I mean, it's legit to say that Vladimir might have had a lot on his mind
going into this fight.
And also, I mean, he'd been winning successfully for about 11 years now. And nobody was in their class. It's very much like Apollo Creed. I mean, he and his brother were just so much better than any of the other active heavyweights. So having him out of the picture and now having the division wide open again. Yeah. There's a couple Americans that, you know, have just as much of a shot as, all the other contenders that are out there. So you never know. But I think Deontay Wilder, who's the WBC title holder, good power, very big, giant, like guy, much like the Klitschkos are. And much younger, and the sky's the limit. There's another guy too, Ortiz, and I forget what his first name is. Great Cuban fighter that defected, and he seems pudgy. He's a giant as well, and he's a little thicker, but man, that guy's got fast hands. He moves fast and he can punch.
Hmm.
So there's some very interesting fighters, and for the first time in a long time, in a suddenly competitive again heavyweight division.
With the name of the character that breaks his cheekbone.
Yes, John.
That was Danny Wheeler was the character's name.
Okay.
And that was played by Andre Ward.
I was going to say, I thought that was Andre Ward, and I just saw him last week.
And they talked about how his the promo scene that they show where they show the gold medal, that's his actual gold medal.
It doesn't surprise me, no.
From yeah, when Andre he was a light heavyweight in Athens.
Legitimately good fighter. No, Andre Ward is a very tough 175 fighter. He fought, or 168, I forget where he's fighting professionally currently, but he fought last week on HBO, and it's his first fight since he had a shoulder injury, and obviously he made Creed prior to this professional comeback, but it had kept him out for like 2 years, or maybe he got the injury right after shooting Creed. I'm not really sure which came first, but no, he's back in action and stuff, and he's got good power, and he's another legitimate guy. So yeah, there's at least one that I can honestly say that I've watched enough of his fights, and yeah, he's a solid 175 champion and contender, and it will be interesting. Like, he was in the pound for pound best list, but since his postponement because of his injury, he still needs a fight or two, I think, before I'm ready to declare him among the pound for pound best. But he's got a lot of talent. He's very young still. He's only in his, like, I think he's 27 or 28. So he's still got a lot of good years left if he takes care of himself. Great technique, very good puncher.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So watch out for that.
I'm just saying.
So if that could ruin things for the sequel, though, John. That's what I'm concerned about.
Well, Antonio Tarver fought Rocky Balboa in the sixth movie. And yeah, right. Tarver was a legit light heavyweight champion. He knocked out Roy Jones. Mm-hmm. Which was very satisfying for me, and now he's a commentator. I don't know how active he is or not. He's kind of eaten himself out of the light heavyweight division, so he's kind of walking around probably at 200, might be able to get down to cruiserweight if he needed to, but I don't know if he wants to or not. I'm not really sure where his career is. But, you know, there was another real champion that, you know, kind of came through the ranks and everything and fought in one of the Rocky movies. Mm-hmm. He was Mason Dixon.
Sure.
Told you about Michael Bent being Union Kane, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mason Dixon. That name's hilarious to me.
I know. That's the thing, man. I mean, you know, they just make these names, and it's like, I don't – Jesus. I mean, if I were a black person, I'd be like, really? Do you want to do that? I don't know if I like that name. I got a problem with that. So whatever. Nobody blinked. I didn't hear anyone complain when Rocky Balboa came up. But it really, I'd be like, hey, man, that's not cool.
Yeah, really.
That's the guy I'm offended.
That's right. All right. Well, John, anything else that you wanted to say about the movie Creed before we start wrapping this baby up?
just honestly, I thought all the leads were tremendous. Everybody in the movie, really. There wasn't a bad performance in that movie. And really, when you think about it, Duke's son and Andre Ward was really good. And Ricky Conlon was really good. I mean, all these guys, I think, came to play. And I think Leo's father. I mean, so up and down, tremendous acting. I think exceptional action direction, as we talked about, and in some ways unprecedented, maybe from a continuous shot standpoint.
Yeah, it could be.
Great story. No, honestly, it was a huge winner. I'm glad. I wish that Coogler and Jordan were recognized and gotten Oscar nominations. I have to be honest and say that I did think that the man from Bridge of Spies did do a more superior than Stallone. So yes. As much as it would have been fine if Stallone had won, it doesn't disappoint me that he didn't, because he lost to a really good actor. That performance, Mark Pricer or whatever his name was I think just a bit better.
Yeah,
I really
very measured on that one, and Sly's kind of being Rocky.
I mean, it's a shame, but it's kind of, you know, I mean, it wouldn't have bothered me. It's kind of like when they gave it to John Wayne back in, you know, 69 or 70 for True Grit, or 71, whenever it was. And it's like, well, yeah, but he's John Wayne being John Wayne. And it's like, yeah, but we love him. And, you know, he did it for so many decades. It's okay. So you can say the same thing about Stallone here.
Sure. And, you know, hopefully we'll see that sequel. I believe that Ryan Coogler is signed up to direct the Black Panther movie.
That's what I'm hearing, and I'm for it.
And that would be interesting. And, I mean, talk about a young guy making a name for himself. He comes out and does Fruitvale and then Creed and then now has a Marvel movie.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. I think it's on him, but I think he's on a hell of a roll. He's and I do think that working with the Marvel producers, you know, that's I've been saying this about the Marvel movies in general. They really are like the Bond films, mm-hmm. where I think the power lies with the producer. I hope they're able to work together, because I do think that ultimately it's more of a producer-led film in Black Panther than, you know, the average, like, I'm sure Coogler got his way on Creed in ways that he may not, doing a Marvel film. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, we've got the track record of Age of Ultron and Ant-Man, where you've got experienced directors going, yeah, I don't feel like playing.
Right. Thanks, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I mean, there is a definite, you know, pattern that they're going with, or formula, yeah, well, I guess, if you want to call it.
Well, that's the thing though. I mean, they're the caretakers of when you're dealing with this kind of franchise, like the Bond films. They're the powers that be. They have the keys to the kingdom, and it's you play their game, and they want your style and improvisation, but within the confines of what they need to, you know, tell a story. And also in the case of the Marvel movies, you know, it's, I'm sure, setting up the next, you know, Avengers Infinity War duo of movies as much as Civil War is going to.
Sure. That's a whole another conversation then.
Oh yes.
The franchise of a franchise of franchise.
Can't wait.
Okay. Well, if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter. Our handle is @plainlabelpod. You could also follow me over there. I'm @ericwilliams79. We have a Facebook page for the show as well, where you could like it. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to Amazon.com and search for our wish list. It's full of movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies in case you're in the giving mood. Just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So I do want to thank Mr. John Suntress once again for coming on and discussing another film with me. Obviously, it was worthwhile in having you discuss all of your boxing history and that sort of thing, as opposed to my regular co-host Rachel and I saying, yeah, the movie was good.
did Rachel like Creed?
She probably didn't see it, I don't think.
All right, no problem.
I don't think she has. I'll have to tell her too. But anyway, So if people wanted to hear more from you or maybe get in contact with you, where could they do so?
Oh, wordballoon.com. That's where my podcast is. I've been doing it for 10 years, and it's one-on-one conversations with comic book creators and pop culture people. If all goes well, I'm talking to one of the Highlanders themselves, Adrian Paul, on Wednesday.
Ooh.
Let me tell you, very excited. I got to tell you, I'm a big fan. So
I like that. I like the TV series more than I like the movies, to be honest.
Oh, you see, I like the movies better than the TV show, but I like the TV show enough that when the opportunity came, I'm like, you're goddamn right, I want to talk to Adrian
Paul.
Well,
see, because also, you know, I grew up with the TV show and went back and watched Christopher Lambert, so.
I understand. Well, again, yeah, that was your age and everything. I get it. Man. All good. But yeah, so that's coming up, and really other great conversations with writers and cartoonists that make great comic books and make great TV and film. So I'm on iTunes as well. And if you want to reach me, you can at Twitter be at it's at John Word Balloon, and under my name under at Facebook and the Word Balloon Network, and email john@wordballoon.com.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.
I was so hard-headed at first. My grandma didn't even believe in me. I kept going, though. All I can say is I told you. Jury at the bank down the vault. You should have never doubted me. I'ma work to my last breath. I'ma hustle to my last breath. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you should have never doubted me. The pain and the struggle followed me. My daddy never that bothered me. And these cold streets made a man of me. Knew a time it'll come, they doubt me. Had to keep them OGs around me. Keep a young, young homie grounded. You never know where your motivation to come from. We do the most with these bras and pop shundown. They try to push you aside, you gotta fight some. I had a line on the side and now we buy guns. I want that number one spot, I'm like Icon. I got that beast in my eyes, I'm like Tyson. With my heart and my drive, I know I'm righteous. Keep some ice in me, rocky like bad boy. Once you win, you gon' want more. Set a tree and need an encore. I was down on my last when I found myself. I be a fighter to the end, to my last breath. I got angels all around me, yeah, yeah. I got love all around me, yeah, yeah. I be a fighter to the end, to my last breath. I'ma hustle to my last breath. I got angels all around me, yeah, yeah. I got love all around me, yeah, yeah. I be a fighter to the end, to my last breath. I'ma hustle to my last breath. I came from the quarter waters. Every nigga in my gang unemployed. You fuck around, you must spawn a gang war. I got an old girl and a transporter. Steppin' is a habit, I got Zans on me. I'm riding in the flame, keep the fan on me. Catch me whippin' up Musang with them bands on me. I'ma kill the competition and I'm playing for keep. You see water drippin' off me, then catch it. I turn nothing into something, now I'm living. You neglected me, you know you shouldn't have did that. They was counting out, you know you shouldn't have did that. You didn't recognize my drive, shouldn't have did that. Now I'm fighting every day, I won't get it back. I just wanna be the champ for the misfits and the one that was saying I couldn't do it. I got angels all around me, yeah, yeah. I got love all around me, yeah, yeah. I'll be a fighter to the end, to my last breath. I'ma hustle to my last breath. I got angels all around me, yeah, yeah. I got love all around me, yeah, yeah. I need a fighter to the end, to my last breath. I'ma hustle to my last breath. Who knew I would take it to a whole nother level? Who knew I would race it with the heart of a rebel? Shout out one checking for me, mama one checking for me. I hustle every day just so I can spend a check on you. You my dog to the end, I got so much respect for you. I watch you give up on me, but I never lost faith, did I? You didn't ever hold me down, and I bought a new safe tonight. Paper plates flushing in their rafe tonight. I'm built with a new reputation. Blood, sweat, and tears in my new foundation. Obama on my main line, I can run the nation. I got angels all around me, yeah, yeah. I got love all around me, yeah, yeah. I'll be a fighter to the end, to my last breath. I'ma hustle to my last breath. I got tears in my eyes. My dreams all I got and I'll die for it. If I love it with a passion, I'ma ride for it.